Welcome to Lawyer Business Advantage. This podcast is dedicated to helping attorneys earn more money, get better clients, and spend more time with family. I'm your host, Alay Yajnik, founder of Law Firm Success Group. Smart business guidance for small law firms begins in 3, 2, 1. And it's my pleasure to welcome to Lawyer Business Advantage my friend and colleague, Brad Herta, CEO and president of Vision Forward Business Solutions and host of the Blue Collar BS podcast. Brad, how are you doing today, my friend?
I am absolutely fantastic, sir. I am. It is a wonderful day here in Wisconsin, and I'm grateful to be on your show.
It's good to see you. I think we haven't seen each other in person for a few years, so at least we can do this on Zoom, which is really nice. And what we're going to be talking about today is actually applying some unique practices to law firms that aren't necessarily law firm best practices, in fact, that come out of another industry. So before we jump into that other industry and how all of that applies, why don't you share with us just a little bit about your background?
Yeah. So as you mentioned, the Blue Collar BS podcast, another colleague of ours, Steve Doyle and I, we started that show. We're both from manufacturing background, construction, trades, different things. And you know, we were tired of the we can't find good people problem in our sector. So we started that show to talk about that multi-generational workforce. And my background has been in the manufacturing space for 20 plus years or so. I was outsourced manufacturing for a large mining equipment manufacturer. And I was blessed to be able to walk into all these family-owned businesses and see what they do, how they do it, the sacrifice those owners give for their employees and their staff. And then they forget about themselves when it gets to that point to transition and exit. And I really like focusing with them on that transition and exit. What does that look like? How do we make that happen? How do we get to be one of the three businesses that actually need the lawyer to do the transaction between the M&A or the PE firm or wherever it's going to go, and preparing them to be a better client for your listeners and all the other people in the line to make that transaction go smoothly?
So we're going to jump into that. And by the way, quick shout out to Stephen Doyle. Great to hear about you and your success, Stephen. And Brad, I want to pull us back to manufacturing. It may not seem to the audience that manufacturing, running a manufacturing business like a mining company applies to law firms, but it totally does. And we're going to get into how that applies here in a moment. But share with us, if you will, a little bit about how you started working with law firms. Maybe a quick description of some of the results the clients got when they worked with you.
So it just came out through networking that you got to have law partners for what we do. I need to have those partners in my business to refer to my clients so that they have the right people and the right resources. And the messages that I was giving and talking about and successes resonated differently because it wasn't the same old spiel. It was something different. It was something unique. It put a spark in their mind to say, hey, what if we did this with our firm? What if we did something like that? And it created opportunity to engage with those with legal firms and create opportunity for them to think differently, behave differently, and drive different results that isn't focused on my billable rate.
So let's talk a little bit more about that with regards to the billable rate. Why is it a problem to focus on the billable rate?
It is the wrong metric, in my opinion. It's the wrong metric. It's like focusing on shop hours in a manufacturing facility. If we got to worry about the shop hours, then we're worried about what we have to bill versus how we satisfy the customer. And I'm a firm believer that if you take care of your customer, if you take care of your promises, take care of your demands, you will ultimately make a happy customer and happy customer returns, referrals, and then all the other stuff takes care of itself. So we focus on a billable rate. We are looking at an outcome from a revenue generation perspective instead of a client-facing portion of it. And we're worried about self versus others. And I'm a big fan of making sure the client's taken care of and not worried about, do I need to bill? Oh, I got to bill 10 hours. So we're all human. And if we only have 8 hours of work for the week, we're going to make that 8 hours last 10 to 12 hours. And then we get this distrust. We get this anxiety and tension between the customer and the lawyer. And it's not a fun position to be in.
No, it is not. And just to be clear, we would never advocate on Lawyer Business Advantage or any other thing that you and I are involved in, Brad, that lawyers should stretch out their hours.
No, and they don't, but there's human nature sometimes where that happens and it's like, okay, great. Okay. Maybe you take an extra time to reread something, or it's subconscious. It's not going to be a malicious intent. It's usually a subconscious behavior, not a malicious intent to defraud somebody, for sure.
So I think you can get a lot of benefit by focusing on billable hours. And we actually spend a lot of time doing that. But that's a separate conversation. I love your point about the client journey, because billable hours are what we call a lagging indicator of your business. It's not going to tell you how your business is going to go. It's going to tell you how your business has gone already. So if you're trying to grow your business, you also need to think about some leading indicators, some things that are indicative of where your business is heading. So tell us a little bit more about that client experience focus, Brad, that you were just talking about.
Well, it's understanding what are you doing to fill your pipeline, so to speak. And depending on what you're doing, and depends how your firm is set up. Like the clients I have, they're smaller firms. So it's not like it's the big firm where we're bring some stuff in, referral, and make money by your own internal referrals. Most of them have their one or two lines and they focus on that and they refer out to somebody else, which creates a different level of complexity and awareness. And being very clear on what lanes you serve and don't serve is also dramatically important. So understand what your business does and doesn't do, and find the people around you to support those other things instead of doing it half-assed, because your client's going to care. They're going to know. And too often a client may come to you and they may have no idea. They're coming to the lawyer because the lawyer is supposed to know. And if your lawyer is faking it to make it because they're running in scarcity mode, like many smaller firms do at times, it just creates this never-ending cycle of despair and just bad opportunities for that client to be a referral partner and a resource. So focus on the greatness and go forward from that, and not worry about I can be everything to everyone. Because if you're everything to everyone, you're nothing to nobody.
Bingo. And I guess the two pictures that I can paint for the audience is you've got, you know, let's just imagine we've got two attorneys. One attorney is they recognize they're always thinking about, oh my God, I don't have enough business right now to give me the income that I want. And it's just it's all they're thinking about is how do I, you know, get more business? And so they take anything that they can get, any practice area, any kind of matter, whatever kind of arrangement, whatever kind of client, they just take them on because they're so focused on getting more work and doing the work. As opposed to, I'm going to paint you a different picture with another attorney who is genuinely interested in an aspect of the law and who, again, doesn't have enough work to fill their plate right now. But they focus on that. They focus on becoming a really good lawyer in that aspect. They know that it's a long-term game that they're playing. And they focus on being a good lawyer, developing great relationships for business, and delivering great client service. Now, I'd ask you as an audience, which of those paths do you want to be on? And which do you think is going to ultimately be more successful? And so, Brad, question for you. I mean, this is a great conversation. And a lot of manufacturing principles could potentially apply to law firms.
Just having process in general and a written process would be a great place to start. Pick one thing. I don't care if it's billing. I don't care if it's client intake process, whatever. Get that one thing so it's at least measurable and recordable and can be changed. Because if you treat everything as its own unique thing, you'll never have a chance to grow. And then you create unicorns and all these other things that happen.
This is a great point. And because when I work with attorneys to create processes in the firm, we oftentimes get tripped up on this. So, you know, Brad, how would you describe the difference between a project and a process?
A project is going to use the process to create a successful outcome. I was blessed to have to implement a project management office when I was with the mining company, 125-year-old mining company that, right, we did it by our brains and our own knowledge and our own wisdom, and we hope for the best outcome at the end. When we did the research and we noticed that we did these 12 steps with our projects all the time. And that process was consistent over and over and over again. And where we got tripped up was the answer to the questions changed the scope of work. So when we took the answer to the question that changed the scope of work, we thought, oh my gosh, this is a unique situation. And we never came back to here's the process. It was always unique answer, go down this rabbit hole and never come back to where the process would get us to a successful outcome. And so understanding what your processes are for, whether it's client intake or whatever it is that you have, it is making sure you do it the same way. And if the client answers the question differently, understand that it's the scope of work that changes and your level of effort changes, not, oh, we have to reinvent the wheel. We need a new CRM system. We need to add a new thing inside our smoke wall system or whatever it is that we have to do. We need some custom fields. No, you don't. You really don't. You may think so. And you may think your practice is unique and way different than everybody else's. And you're right. It's unique because it's you. But what you're dealing with isn't unique to the industry.
Yeah. And to your point, Brad, a process doesn't need to capture every last possibility of a potential matter or a potential case. And so where do you draw that line between, you know, you want to define a process, but you don't want to over-define it so it becomes so cumbersome that it's just unusable?
So I'll look at it, ask the partners and say, okay, where do you think your next employees or your next people are going to be coming from? What type of people you think you're going to be bringing in? So that somebody that's coming in from the outside could get a very high probability of success for the desired result. I like focusing on results, and results matter at the end of the day because that's what drives everything else. So if you understand the result you're looking for, because when you hand that paperwork over or you hand it over to somebody else and you say, hey, get this done, 2 hours later, you yell at them because it's not done the way you wanted it. So then you're frustrated. The employee's frustrated. We've not won at all because we've not defined the success, what success looks like, and you've not given them a chance to be successful. So you as the leader, it's your duty and responsibility to ensure that your staff can be successful. Not my staff should read my, I'm the lawyer, so the staff should be able to figure it out. They counter to me. No, you are the leader. They are the followers. So put them in position to follow and be successful, to make your life easier, to go leverage your unique skills and your God-given talents to be the best lawyer you can be and get rid of all those other things so you can be successful.
Love that. Can you imagine, attorney entrepreneurs who are listening, if you had a new hire and they came on board and you said, here are the processes that you need to do your job. And you handed them, you know, whether it's checklists or whatever it is, but not a huge tome, but you know, a few pages of processes to do their job. Can you imagine how much better they would feel, how much better you would feel, and how much more productive they would be from day one?
Well, and think about how many organizations will not go and hire because they don't have the infrastructure in place to support the onboarding process. So I'll just do it myself. It's just so much easier. It's just so much easier if I just take this on myself instead of teaching somebody else how to do it. And then that 10 minutes a day or half hour a week turns into hundreds of hours of years. And you go, oh my gosh, what opportunities did we miss? What's going on? And imagine if you were able to take that 30 minutes a week, offload it effectively, times how many people you have in your practice, and go, huh, wow, okay, that definitely pays for itself. Because when we go back to the billing, and I don't know how you educate or try to get your organization to do their billing for admin work at full rate probably isn't the best thing to do to get people excited to work with you.
No.
But if you're doing your admin work, but you're still expecting, if you're expecting $400 an hour and you're doing admin work and you're should be billing that at 100, why are you having why are you doing that? Create the systems and tools around you to support them to be successful.
Absolutely. And so it's, you know, it may involve investing some time up front to create those processes, but then you reap the benefits forever and
forever. It's compounding interest,
right?
Essentially.
And it helps not only with delivering a better product, but it also helps with employee retention, employee success, and it helps your peace of mind and your sanity too. So processes are enormous. Love that you're bringing those up. And a lot of law firms, unfortunately, don't have them. And if you are thinking about putting together a process, there's a couple of things you might want to do. One is just write it down on paper first. And if you're trying to figure out how detailed to get, just remember that, you know, a process is not supposed to be comprehensive. It's not supposed to teach someone how to do their job. It's really just a series of steps as a reference for them to use to go back and say, yep, I got to do this and do this and do this and do this. Here's my next step. Here's a quick thing I want to make sure I shouldn't forget about every time. And you know, the rule of thumb that we use at Law Firm Success Group is a process or a system, the purpose of it is it's supposed to keep a good team performing well, even when they're having a bad day. And that's the key, is a good team will perform really well when they're on it. But we also want them to perform pretty well, even when they're having an off day. And that's where the processes can really, really help out.
Correct. And great that you mentioned that a process versus a work instruction are very different. If I have an invoicing thing, I have to do invoicing in a very specific manner. I might have an invoicing process, but I probably have an invoicing work instruction within my software system that I use that I need to make sure I click the buttons and do the things in the right sequence to get the desired output. That process isn't going to outline every button, every click, screenshots, those types of things. The work instruction does that. that's the next layer down. And I would urge you to let the employees build out those work instructions and then have them tested on somebody who has no idea what's going on. Because if somebody that has no idea that's going on can get the right result, then you know you got the right work instruction. And there's a very big difference between process and work instruction. So thank you for that clarity.
Yeah, sure, Brad. It's funny because I remember, I'm dating myself here quite a bit, but when I was writing work instructions, it was a lot of, you know, printing out screens and then, you know, annotating them with paper and then rescanning the document. And it was a long, cumbersome, painful process. And now they have so many other ways to create work instructions. What are some of the ways that you've worked with your clients, Brad, to create those work instructions in a less laborious way?
Just record the screen while you're doing it and talk it through, because as you talk it through and you have all your yeah buts and don't forgets and this is and that's, as you get to create the visual and audio piece of it, that the watcher and viewer gets to see your tone, understand, and really understand, is that important or not important? As you're going through it, because you're going to go down naturally and go, yeah, this is okay. Most of the time you need to do this, but sometimes you don't need to, because we got to worry about this over here. It's more important. Record your screen and record the audio and put it up on your internal network. And here you go.
Exactly. Any tools you could suggest to do that?
There's a good tool that I enjoy. It's called, it's going to sound really weird on audio, but it's called MMHMM. Which allows you to do some really good screen recording annotation and follow along with the camera. It's a really good presentation type system and tool. I think it's like $99 a year to use it. You can create different studios, different backgrounds, different things. I've used it several times to do screen recordings of, hey, this is what I'm doing. And here's how I show you what to do next when I use this template or this form. It works really, really
awesome.
Well.
That's
simple to use.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. I can see why that's challenging. Yes, on the
exactly. MMHMM.
MMHMM, really cool. There's a few other tools that I've used and clients have used. I'm a Mac guy, so Mac just has QuickTime built in, and you can do screen captures and recordings on that. Then other people use Zoom, where they just fire up a Zoom meeting, hit record, and start to, you know, share their screen and start talking, and that basically creates a recording when you end the meeting. And the third option is a tool that I've had clients use called Loom. So there's four.
Loom works really well.
There's four options for you folks. So put them to work, or better yet, as Brad said, have your team do it. Like, once you create the process, have your team record their screens and create the work instruction and take that burden off you.
Right. And it creates the accountability along the way. So if you don't get the right result, you have that accountability back to your staff. Say, okay, cool. You own it. You did it. This is good. And they feel part of the team, and they're going to be more invested in making sure that when there's a change that they go back and update it and keep that recording or that process, the work instruction updated with whatever revisions that go on. Because as we all know, software changes. Oh, hey, here's your new patch. Here's your new update. And now we moved a button from left to right. And you need to make those updates every once in a while.
Absolutely. I love Zoom, but it drives me bonkers because every week when I open it up, something's different, and I don't know what it is, but I just know that something is different now, and it's created some challenges over the years.
I completely agree with you, Elaine.
So, Brad, what are some of the things you're looking forward to in your practice over the next year, year and a half or so?
Well, so I'm looking forward to the continued results. I work a lot in the blue collar world, so that creates a lot of opportunity because the demand isn't going away. The workforce problem isn't going away, so supporting those and the transition of elders leaving and younger people taking over, that's not going away either. So I'm in a very good spot there. The part that I'm really excited about is ensuring that if you look at macroeconomics indicators here in the US, that 2032-2033 opportunity of, hey, we think that that's going to be this large crash because of the journey of life cycle of people and not having things going on. That's the macro view. So positioning those organizations to be prepared, regardless of what industry you're in, for opportunity. And that could be, I've got some law partners. We were talking about power of attorneys, things like that. It's like, oh, okay. And we were talking about out of state children. So both my kids live out of state. And they're like, yeah, if something happens to them, you don't have any, it's up to the state to decide what's going on. Like, huh, yeah, we should probably do something like that. It's been in the back of my mind for 6 months. So I need to get to those to my kids and say, let's get this done so that we can have that control. When I mentioned it to my wife, she was looking at one of my notes in my Mac and saying, oh, power of attorney, kids, what's that? I said, well, here's what that means. She's like, oh, she didn't know. I was like, okay, well, I'll take care of that here in 2024.
Yeah, I never knew what any of that was until I, launched my left corporate, launched my coaching practice and started talking to other professionals and learned a lot about that space. And those are definitely things you want to have in place. So in your work, when you work with attorneys, you work with transition, internal succession, as well as external succession. And then you also do some work in the multi-generational space. Tell us a little bit about that.
All right. So we have four generations in the workforce, and that's not going away anytime soon. Right? We got the boomers, Gen X, millennials, and Gen Z. And Gen Z is 27 years old and younger, but the older folks like myself and all those kids, they don't know anything. Well, they've been in the workforce now almost 10 years for many of them potentially. And if they've been out of college, so here's an interesting stat that we found from one of my, I'm on a Home Building Trades Foundation. We had some kids do some research for us. And this goes into the workforce and the frustration with employers and employees. In 1979, 64% of eligible high school students had jobs. Okay, 1979. In 2022, that number dropped down to 15%. Of those 85% that didn't have a job that typically go off to college, they likely don't have a job either as they go through school, other than maybe working at the library, something on campus, not anything that's really earth-shattering. So their true real first opportunity to work as a team or work inside of something where there's a command structure and a hierarchy and those types of things is their first job out of school, which was enlightening when we got that research to help some of my older business owners understand that, look, your common sense of what you think common sense is and what you should know and what this is and what that is doesn't exist in the same way that you grew up. Technology, 100%. They're what light years ahead. So understand that's their common sense. Practicality and application of if I'm out of work, I go ask for work instead of sit there and do nothing. That needs to be taught. And it needs to be tolerated. It needs to be going forward and communicated how to do that and teach them how to move outside of their own comfort zone, outside of everything is scheduled, because everything's been scheduled for since they were 5 years old, everything along the way. So when they get to work and you go, oh, here's the two things you got to do today. Cool, they got them done in 2 hours. Now what are they supposed to do with the other eight? And you decided not to check in with them and was pissed off because they did nothing all day.
So attorney entrepreneurs, if that sounds like a situation that you might be intimately familiar with, get in touch with Brad. Brad, if people want to connect with you, what's the best way for them to do that?
Best way is typically on LinkedIn. I'm all over there all the time. Otherwise, it's beherda@focalpointcoaching.com, or my website is vfbsolutions.com as well, as in visionforwardbusinesssolutions.com.
Awesome. Brad, thank you so much for joining us on Lawyer Business Advantage today.
No problem. I appreciate the opportunity.
It's good talking with you. And everyone, that is Brad Herda with Vision Forward Business Solutions and host of the Blue Collar BS Podcast. Take care, Brad.
Thank you very much.
And that's a wrap for this episode of the Lawyer Business Advantage Podcast. One thing that would really help both us and other new potential listeners is for you to rate this show and leave a comment in iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you tune in to listen. And I want to hear from you, so connect with me on LinkedIn and let me know what you think of this episode. And if you are a solo or an owner of a small law firm, and you're looking to earn more money, attract better clients, or reduce your stress, we would love to talk with you to see how we can help. Request your free law firm assessment by visiting lawfirmsuccessgroup.com. Again, that URL is lawfirmsuccessgroup.com. We look forward to talking with you soon. Thank you for listening. My name is Ale Yajnik. Until next time, remember, you can seize freedom. You can embrace happiness. You can build your perfect practice.